Hello, and welcome to Life Matters, the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. We're honored to host a variety of guests within the pro-life movement, each bringing their own unique perspectives, experiences, and backgrounds. The views and opinions expressed by our guests do not necessarily reflect those of Life Matters, Assure Women's Center, or our affiliates. Our goal is to foster open, thoughtful dialogue around life-affirming issues and equip listeners to stand for life.
Welcome to Life Matters. I'm your host, Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're joined by Dr. Ingrid Scott, Vice President and Director of Medical Affairs at the Charlotte Lozier Institute. Dr. Scott is a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist with more than 30 years of experience caring for women and delivering babies. And now she focuses on research and public policy related to women's health and the dignity of every human life. Our conversation today will focus on the science-based risk and complications of abortion procedures, including both surgical and drug-induced abortions. We'll also talk about how maternal health data is collected, where it falls short, and why accuracy matters when women's lives are at stake. Dr. Scott, thank you so much for joining me today.
I'm so glad to be with you, Toni.
All right. Before we dive into the research, can you share a bit about your background as an OBGYN and what led you from private practice into research and policy work?
Yes, thanks. I grew up in a pro-life home, so I've always really appreciated large families. I'm one of six kids, 21 grandchildren. I went into obstetrics because I loved taking care of two patients, a woman and her unborn child. Surprisingly, most obstetricians do not have to address the issue of abortion. Most women, if they desire an abortion, they know the organization that sells them in the United States. They Planned Parenthood operates outside of the medical system largely. So even though less than 10% of obstetricians will perform an abortion, many of them identify as pro-choice, as you may know, but it's not really something that they address. But over time, caring for women, asking the questions, I discovered that so many of my patients had been harmed by abortion, sometimes physically, many times emotionally with mental health complications, and often related to their relationships as well. I think we all recognize, you know, men and women are increasingly becoming adversarial, and abortion, I believe, is one of the reasons that that has happened. I began doing my own research because I was told by my pro-abortion professional society that abortion is safe, that it's necessary medical care. And I discovered, in fact, that just as I suspected, so many women had been harmed. Then I felt led to retire from private practice, join the Charlotte Lozier Institute, which is a think tank that is dedicated to science and statistics on life issues. And I have loved it. I love being able to provide data to help people understand the harms that come about from abortion.
That's good. You know, I hadn't really thought about that. You said less than 10% of physicians have actually performed abortions, but many are pro-choice. I hadn't thought about it from that aspect that Planned Parenthood operates outside medical norms. And so that they are, I mean, obviously we have some, you know, a few places here that will, you know, perform abortions, but most of the time they're not necessarily in your normal practitioner's office.
Yeah, it's very important. And also, you know, as we're seeing many states protecting unborn life, other states deciding that many states have put into place ballot initiatives that say, we're going to guarantee a right to abortion until viability. But what we see is even in those situations, Planned Parenthood has sued every state.
Yeah.
So where there's limitations, they don't want any limitations on abortion. But even where they allow a widespread abortion, but maybe they have facility standards, maybe they have practitioner standards, mandatory waiting periods, mandatory ultrasounds, all of these things that help a woman to be safer and also give her time to slow down and think about whether this is what she really wants. Planned Parenthood cannot stand anything to stand in the way of an immediate abortion. And so they are actively trying to get rid of all of these laws that supervise their practice, which demonstrates it's not about quality care for women.
It's not.
It's merely about abortion access. And if the woman suffers, if the woman has a complication, she's collateral damage that they are willing to allow in pursuit of their ideological goals.
Yes. I mean, it's just really sad when you think about it. We talk about, you know, they want to say it's women's health, and they're not concerned about the health of that woman. By withholding that information from them, it's just not right. And I think it's I'm grateful for people like you that are willing to speak out. And I'm hoping that our listeners who don't know will be able to take some of this information that you're sharing with them and hopefully share with other people so that our eyes are open. And, you know, I always pray that the Lord will remove the scales from people's eyes and allow them to see abortion for what it really is. I pray that for abortionists. And I think that's something that needs to happen wide-scale across our country. Yeah.
Yes, I agree. I mean, the facts are out there. They're sometimes difficult to discover because in our country, almost nothing about abortion data is mandatorily collected. On a federal level, we don't even know the numbers because it's voluntarily submitted to the CDC. We don't know complications. Again, you think the abortion industry is going to voluntarily report their complications? Of course not.
Yeah.
And women often, when they're injured, they don't want to talk about it. They don't want to report it either. I've cared for many women in the emergency room who've been harmed. And often they will tell me, Dr. Skop, I think this is what I deserved for making the choice I did. So, so again, nobody's talking about it. These women are internalizing it. They're suffering silently. Yeah. And that lack of data empowers the abortion industry to say, hardly anything's been reported. Well, by the way, the FDA in 2016 said, you know what, on these abortion drugs, we don't want to hear about a complication unless it kills the woman. So they used to require complication reporting. They decided, you know what, enough. We don't want to hear about it. So this is the place that we're living in today.
Yeah,
is that the FDA, when they approved these drugs, mifepristone and misoprostol, mifepristone blocks progesterone, kills the unborn child. Misoprostol causes essentially contractions or labor to expel the pregnancy tissue. When they approved the drugs in the year 2000, they broke all their own rules to do it. They did it under an accelerated approval system that is meant for drugs that treat life-threatening illnesses. We know that pregnancy is not life-threatening, it's life-giving.
Absolutely.
And in fact, more than 96% of abortions in our country, they don't try to make a medical reason for the abortion. They're usually social or financial. But the FDA has really not protected women like it is their job to do, because every chance they've gotten, the opportunity, they've taken away safeguards on these drugs.
Absolutely. You know, you mentioned that 96% of abortions are for social or financial reasons. That's something that we don't always often talk about. But the other side always talks about the tiny, tiny percentage of in cases of rape or, in, you know, those things. And I think if we talk in those positive terms, you know, I'm saying not positive terms, but 96% of abortions are, you know, committed because of social and financial. If we started putting that back on them instead of them using that mind, you know, the small number. And once again, those are important numbers, but they're so tiny that we're missing the real reason why people are having abortions. We don't talk about that very often.
Yes, and I agree. I believe that this isn't, because the other side has sort of hijacked the conversation by pretending like they're the ones who care about women.
Right.
And sadly, we've reached the point in our country where even though many people will acknowledge, yes, that is a living human being whose life ends through abortion, but it's okay because that life does not have as much value as the mother, and the mother needs this. So they've made that argument. They are ignoring the human rights violation of the young human who is killed. But when we actually look at what's happening with women, and again, if your listeners want to come to my website, I have a paper called Wounded Women. It talks about all the ways physically, mental health, socially, that abortion is hurting women. What are some of these ways? Well, we see that men see this as an easy out. You know, it used to be shotgun weddings, not uncommon. Now you hardly ever hear about it because men say, well, you have this other option. We don't have to get married. You can just end the life of your child. Women, even if they recognize that, well, the situation's complex, maybe it's a new relationship or, you know, something else is going on, they can't help the fact that their bodies biologically are primed to bond with that child. That's how God made us, so that we would love our offspring. So even if she thinks, you know, mentally this is the right decision, there's still going to be some harm to her soul from disrupting that relationship with her child. And again, that one of our surveys demonstrated that 60% of women who had a history of abortion said they would have preferred to give birth if they'd only had more support or, you know, material support, which, of course, pregnancy centers are trying to offer more relationship support from the man. Men have been taught to say, it's your choice.
Yeah.
You know, they often don't, even if maybe they do want to parent the child, they have been told that they have to leave that choice to the women. And then the women don't feel supported when their boyfriend or husband says, I don't care, it's your choice, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
And so, you know, the narrative between the sexes has been so harmed by this option of abortion as a solution when there's so many better solutions for women's problems.
Life Matters is the program where we engage life issues with critical thinking and a biblical worldview. And it is a ministry of Assure Women's Center. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today.
You're listening to Life Matters. I'm Toni Clark, Executive Director of Assure Women's Center in Omaha. Today, we're speaking with Dr. Ingrid Scott from the Charlotte Logier Institute about the science-based risk and complications of abortion and the realities of maternal health in the United States. I want to back up just a tad bit, Dr. Scott. For listeners who may not be familiar with the Charlotte Logier Institute, can you briefly explain its role in researching women's health and why medical accuracy and transparency are so central to its work? We've kind of, I want people to know actually what the Institute is actually doing.
Thank you. So we are the premier institute that is doing peer-reviewed research. That we care about the data. As I mentioned, the data is hard to come by, but it's not impossible. There are ways to find out you know, approximate incidences of complications, the types of complications that can occur. And so our job is to find the best quality data that we can, and then to put that out for the American public to educate them. So, for example, many of our papers, we have short fact sheets, we have long white papers, but everything is extensively referenced from the peer-reviewed literature. That means that's in the scientific literature, and it's been reviewed by other scientists. So we're not putting out our opinions. We're putting out good, solid science. And I think it's important for all of us to be able to tell our friends what's really going on. It's an emotional issue. Obviously, people have very, very strong opinions about it. But you know, in terms of how it's harming women, there is very objective data to demonstrate that. These abortion drugs, about one out of 20 women, even when they're used the way they're supposed to be, and many times they're not used that way, but even in that situation, one out of 20 is often going to need surgery. Often, sometimes in emergency situations, approximately one out of 25 women go to an emergency room. That's a pretty significant complication.
Absolutely.
One out of 25 people who take Tylenol do not go to the emergency room. So right there, you know, we've demonstrated it's not safer than Tylenol, which, of course, we know intuitively.
Absolutely. So tell us where we can find that information. You mentioned your website. Where can people find some of the white papers that you've written or the research that you've done? And then tell us a little bit about your article, Gaslighting Women.
Yes, thanks. So Logier Institute is L-O-Z-I-E-R Institute.org. That's our website. If your listeners are interested in maternal mortality and health issues for women related to abortion, I have a series of papers that I've written that are called On Women's Health. So they can find a lot of data there. We've written a tremendous number of papers about these abortion drugs and the way in which they are harming women because they are not being regulated. They're being, in many cases, ordered online, sent in the mail because the FDA has removed essentially almost every safeguard on the drugs. You can search my name and find out, you know, many of the papers that I've written there on that website. But I have a wonderful colleagues that have also written some really good information. And I, you know, do encourage everybody to read, educate, and then, you know, tell your friends, tell your pastor.
Absolutely.
Let's have a conversation where we're actually, you know, helping people to understand that what the American public have been told about abortion from the abortion industry are lies. They're deceptive.
Yeah.
And they're harming women.
Yeah. So tell us a little bit about the Gaslighting Women article you wrote.
Well, in this case, this was specifically about the things that Planned Parenthood will say to women and how they will influence. Unfortunately, in our country, young women almost from kindergarten are being exposed to Planned Parenthood. They are in the schools. They are teaching them sex education. In some cases, they're confusing them about their gender. They are introducing them to the idea that they can be sexual beings and that there's no harm from that. And they are presenting themselves as a trusted companion who just wants the best for the women. So when the women do become sexually active, they know Planned Parenthood will be there for me. They'll give me contraception. Of course, they rarely explain the nuance that only abstinence is completely 100% certain to prevent pregnancy, that every contraceptive method can fail, and that condoms don't prevent every sexually transmitted infection. They act like no harm, no foul. We'll give you these options. And if they don't work, we've got backups for you. We've got antibiotics for your sexually transmitted infections. We've got abortion for the pregnancy that you didn't want. So, and again, it's full of euphemisms. They're told that abortion drugs are safer than Tylenol. They're told they never talk about the human being that whose life is ending. They just merely talk about the ending of pregnancy, the condition of being pregnant. Very, very deceptive. You know, unfortunately, so many women have believed what they've been told, and it's been to their harm and detriment that has happened.
Yeah, there's definitely a disconnect between marketing and then like the medical reality that it really impacts women's ability to give truly informed consent. And once again, we're thankful for organizations like your, you know, that you're part of that organization that is willing to bring these things to light. But then I think it's up to us as, you know, as people of God to hear these things, and whether it's we get involved at pregnancy centers, volunteering, or whether we, like you said, sharing this information with someone that doesn't know. I mean, once we find it out, we need to share it. Share it with our pastors, share it with, you know, our congregations. And I think we can begin to turn the tide about abortion, because the marketing, you know, especially marketing to, you know, the young women that perhaps would be a part of, take part in abortion, is huge. And they're missing the realities of what, you know, is really happening when it comes to an abortion.
Yeah, that's absolutely true. They find themselves in a moment of panic. And they're told, here, take a pill. It'll get you back to where you were, you know, a month ago before you discovered you were pregnant. Yep. But of course, it's a dramatic experience for these women. They bleed a long time. Nearly half describe the pain as severe when they take these drugs because their bodies are going into labor. Sadly, so many of these women do see their child that they've chosen to abort, and they panic. Of course, they're not prepared for that. What do they do? Do they pull them out and take them in the backyard and bury them? Some of them do. Some of them flush that child. But forever after, when they go into that restroom, they're told they can have this abortion in the privacy of their own home. But what it has done is caused their own home, their own sanctuary, to become a place of trauma. Yeah. And sadly, young women in our country are already suffering from an acute mental health crisis.
Yeah,
The CDC has told us that young women, that 60% of them have feelings of worthlessness, depression. 30%, it said, within the past year had thought about suicide. Yeah. So that's even without what's going on with these unsupervised abortions that women are experiencing alone. I just can't imagine how much this is worsening that problem for them.
Absolutely. So we've been talking mostly about the chemical abortion, but let's go back to the basics. What are the main types of abortion procedures that women undergo today, and how does gestational age affect medical risk? I want to answer this question for people that may not know the difference in chemical abortion. That's been the theme on many of our programs, chemical abortion, because that is probably the number one way women are having abortions. But there are some other procedures as well. So I want them to understand that there's more than one type. And so if you could go into that just a little bit.
Sure. The traditional abortion procedure was a first trimester surgical abortion. The abortion industry doesn't want to call it surgery anymore, by the way. They call it procedural because, again, it all has to do with the euphemisms and making it seem as easy as possible. Yeah. But this is a suction aspiration. And in the hands of an abortionist who's qualified, the complications are fairly minor. However, the further in a pregnancy you get, the more complications can occur. So after the first trimester, this procedure becomes what's called a dilation and extraction, or D&E procedure. Some people call it dismemberment abortion because that's what it is. And sadly, the child is big enough that he cannot be removed with just suction. And so, as the name implies, he's taken out that way. These become much more dangerous for women. The CDC's own data tells us that those early D&Es, 15 times more likely to kill a woman. A D&E that's done later, at the later part of the second trimester, is 76 times more likely to kill a woman. So they are very dangerous. And again, I alluded earlier, but the abortion industry does not like to be supervised.
Yeah.
And so we don't know, really, are the people doing these procedures, are they qualified? Do they know what they're doing? Because the complications can be quite catastrophic. And this has been documented by many watchdog organizations like Operation Rescue, if you want to hear some of these horrible stories. But those are surgical abortions. Yeah. Now, the reason that the abortion industry pivoted to medication abortion is not because there's fewer complications. There's actually 4 to 6 times as many complications with these drugs compared to those early surgical abortions. The reason they pivoted is they had a staffing problem. Doctors, obstetricians do not want to perform abortions. And so they were having trouble getting enough doctors to do the abortions they wanted done. And so that's part of the reason that these drugs were, there was such a political process that allowed them to enter the market. And I think, unfortunately, I mean, we could talk all day about motivations behind it, but for many doctors that were involved in that process, it was a very eugenic motivation. There were some women that they did not want having babies. And of course, early on, there was also a population control motivation. Yeah. But, you know, today, as probably your listeners know, we have the opposite problem. We are not reproducing ourselves. Right. We are having a demographic collapse. And it's across the world because really, sadly, the narrative for so many years has been that children are a blight on the, you know, planet, that children will ruin your life, that maternal mortality, that women might die in childbirth. I mean, all of these untrue things have been promoted to young women, but now they're afraid to have children. They're afraid to go through a pregnancy. So again, there's just so much truth that we really need to shine on this murky issue.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I hadn't really thought about that, but with you're talking a procedure that has 4 to 6 times greater risk than a surgical abortion, but it's the number one method of abortion. And we're just saying it's okay.
And it's increasingly promoted to women. If you look at graphs from the year 2000 when it was approved until now, what you see is a very exponential increase. It's estimated that more than two-thirds of all abortions in our country are performed with these drugs. But again, they don't have to hire a surgeon. In fact, many times it's not even a doctor that's distributing these pills. And as we mentioned, they're now just being sent in the mail. They're circumventing the pro-life states legislation providing abortions in states that are trying to protect unborn life. In fact, more than half of abortion clinics don't even offer surgical abortions. So this is the only option that women have. And that they're self-managing their own abortions. They're going through this experience entirely alone. Yeah. For so many of the women, whoever prescribed the drugs is in another state. Those doctors aren't available to care for these women. Mm-hmm. So the only option they have when they have a complication is to go to an emergency room. And that's why I know this is happening, because I'm seeing so many of these women in my ER in Texas who have nowhere else to turn.
One of your recent research areas involves emergency room visits following abortion. What are some of the findings that you look at when you look at ER data?
Right. So, you know, again, given the deficiencies in the data, you may say, how do you find, how can you find good data? Most abortions in our country are paid for privately. They're not paid with insurance, but an insurance database can be give you helpful data. So there are 17 states that allow their state Medicaid dollars to pay for elective abortions. So we purchased that data and we identified the abortions that were occurring, and then we looked to see what sort of medical events were happening afterwards.
Please join us next week for part two of our interview with Ingrid Skop. Life Matters is an educational outreach resource of Assure Women's Center in Omaha, Nebraska. To learn more about the ministry of Assure, visit firststeptolife.com. That's firststeptolife.com. A group of generous partners has challenged Assure supporters to give $500,000 by May 29th. If that goal is reached, they will release an additional $100,000. Your gift today can help unlock this challenge and reach more women before the abortion industry does. Visit firststeptolife.com to give today. Thanks for listening to Life Matters. Join us again next week at the same time right here on Bot Radio Network.